track record. It looks at the recent war against Iran, the fact that Iran was negotiating with the United States when the United States attacked Iran 2 days before the next round of negotiations. So I think this is a message for American politicians. If they think they can get away with murder, they killed more than 1,000 Iranians a few months ago, mostly civilians. If they think they can trick their way through this type of deception operations, if they think they can use propaganda to influence public opinion in Iran and achieve their goals in that manner, they are going to be fully surprised by realizing that these type of policies and actions are not going to bear fruit.
The Israeli genocide in the Gaza Strip claims more civilian lives as the besieged territory is pounded by the regime's indiscriminate air and artillery strikes. One of the latest attacks killed nearly two dozen Palestinians after a shelter for displaced people was bombed near a market in Gaza City. Four civilians were killed after a family home was hit in the Al-Nusayrat refugee camp in central Gaza. Fatalities were reported after the regime's forces opened fire on a gathering of displaced people in the vicinity of a clinic in the Al-Shati refugee camp west of Gaza City. Separate Israeli strikes killed at least five Palestinians in the southern and central parts of Gaza. The UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees said a dozen of its facilities in Gaza City have been hit last week, including nine schools and two health centers. The death toll from the Israeli genocide now exceeds 65,380, with nearly 167,000 others injured. A correspondent in Gaza, Motebu Mosabe, joined us earlier with the latest updates on Israel's strikes across the besieged territory. Let's take a listen.
The plumes of smoke are still pillowing and rising from several parts of the city as a result of the extensive airstrikes and attacks. We are talking about more than 35 Palestinian civilians have been confirmed killed in less than 24 hours, while this number is still on the rise because the Israeli attacks are still perpetual. Needless to mention that the Israeli occupation forces on the ground are still highly relying on using the booby-trapped robots. And as you know, every one out of those booby-trapped robots actually leaves massive trail of destruction in the residential areas, because we're talking about at least 5 tons of explosive being, detonated in those areas. The Israeli tanks are pushing ahead to the heart of Gaza City from all directions, particularly when it comes to Al-Nasr neighborhood, which witnessed another wave of the destructive airstrikes and attacks over the past couple of hours, targeting more residential buildings. And in addition to that, southern parts of the city, particularly Al-Sabra neighborhood, which is still witnessing another advancement of the Israeli occupation forces on the ground. And given the fact that the Israeli occupation forces are still targeting the heart of Gaza City, several or the vast majority of the hospitals that were operating over the past couple of months in Gaza City are now out of service, and they are on the verge of collapse because the Israeli forces are still preventing the entry of the fuel those hospitals need to operate and function right now in Gaza City.
Addressing the 80th session of the UN General Assembly, South Africa's president warned against the ongoing Israeli genocide in Gaza, urging the international community to stop the regime's crimes.
We cannot and should not accept that members of this organization continue willfully to violate without consequence the charter that we have all agreed to uphold. Therefore, as nations that have pledged to uphold the UN Charter, we have the ultimate responsibility to ensure and protect the rights of the Palestinian people to self-determination, consistent with the case that South Africa brought before the International Court of Justice. There is growing global consensus that Israel is committing genocide in Gaza. Just last week, the United Nations Independent International Commission of Inquiry found that Israel is responsible for the commission of genocide in Gaza. Palestinians continue to face genocide and famine. We have a duty to act.
Ramaphosa referred to a recent report by the UN Independent International Commission of Inquiry confirming that Israel has committed genocide in the besieged territory. The South African president also lashed out at the UN Security Council, saying it has become ineffective in carrying out its mandate to maintain global peace and security and needs to change its structure. He expressed his country's deep concern about the Security Council's failure to ensure accountability and uphold international law. The presidents of Lebanon and Iraq also addressed the session, urging global action to stop the Israeli genocide in Gaza.
We call for the immediate cessation of Israeli aggression, the full withdrawal of its occupying forces from all Lebanese territory, and the release of our hostages that we shall not forget nor leave behind. And we insist on the complete implementation of UN Security Council Resolution 1701. It is our moral, human, and political obligation to call for an immediate end to the devastation taking place in Gaza. We urge the revival of a new political track aimed at finding a just and permanent solution to the Palestinian question based on the resolutions of international legitimacy.
Civilians are beset by killing, starvation, displacement, and the destruction of infrastructure and state institutions. This is inhumane. It is a disgrace for humanity. Therefore, this must end. We reiterate our call for the international community to take urgent measures to ensure a just and comprehensive settlement to the Palestinian cause through the implementation of United Nations resolutions. This and the establishment of the independent state of Palestine is the only pathway to stability and security in the Middle East and the entire world.
On the day that the UN General Assembly debates began, protests in New York expressed rage over the continuous genocide against the Palestinians at the hands of the Israeli occupation, while world leaders were meeting. Our correspondent Rachel Hamdoun has more on the story.
The assembly will hear. While presidents and leaders took the podium during the UNGA high-level week in New York, activists and demonstrators protested the UNGA debates as the people of Gaza continue to be ethnically cleansed by the Israeli occupation and the world remains watching. Banners condemning the UN's negligence towards preserving international law were held high among the crowd, alongside the complicity of the U.S. in the forced starvation of the Palestinian people and the sale of weapons to the occupation killing the Palestinians.
After 2 years of genocide, most of the world has come to realize that it is in fact a genocide, except the United States and Israel, of course. And the U.S. is, Trump is speaking today, which is a mockery of anything.
The protest today at the UN is mostly about the fact that Benjamin Netanyahu is down here and there's going to be talks about how Israel and the U.S. are going to respond, which is most likely going to lead to full annexation of the West Bank. We are also protesting the fact that multiple states or multiple countries have now recognized a Palestinian state, which, while it is one step forward, is not full liberation. You know, you can't recognize that the knife is there without fully pulling it out and healing the wound.
As world leaders gather at the UN headquarters here in New York to discuss various issues, the urgency of Gaza's situation is highlighted by protesters surrounding the building. These protesters are demanding the protection of Palestinians. They are demanding the end of the Gaza siege and the liberation of Palestine.
Demonstrators also criticize the double standards and selective protection that the international body stands for when it comes to preaching about women's rights, but Palestine is often overlooked.
What kind of values do you stand for? Like you just said, there's pregnant women, there's babies being killed, there's no access to menstrual supplies. How can you be human if you're not letting these, if not letting aid in, not stopping the occupation? It's ridiculous.
It's all of our rights. It's women's rights, it's children's rights, it's human rights, it's really planet rights. Like, we're, by not protecting one community of people, we're really not protecting any of us because it's a chain reaction. And when you fail to protect someone, you're really failing to protect yourself. And I think they have to remember that.
More protests are planned to occur for the length of the high-level week, calling for the freedom of Palestine from occupation and the preservation of the Palestinian identity. Rachel Hamdoun, New York.
The Hamas resistance movement says it has never been an obstacle to reaching a ceasefire agreement in the Gaza Strip. The movement's remarks came in response to U.S. President Donald Trump's recent claims that the movement is the party refusing the Gaza truce. Hamas said the U.S. administration, the mediators, and the entire world know that Israel's war-criminal prime minister is the only party obstructing all attempts to reach an agreement. Hamas said it has always been flexible and positive regarding the efforts made to end the Gaza war. It also pointed out Tel Aviv's recent bombing of the headquarters of the movement's negotiating delegation in Qatar while they were discussing Trump's latest proposal. Hamas called on the U.S. to intervene positively to force the terrorist regime of Israel to end its crimes of genocide, ethnic cleansing, and forced displacement against Palestinians. It also urged Washington to stop providing political and military cover for Israel's brutal war on Gaza. Political commentator Tony Gosling says not only the U.S., but all the Western media outlets are portraying Hamas as a terrorist organization, while Israel is the real terrorist.
Well, it's not just Donald Trump, is it? It's the so-called reality in the entire Western press, which is talking about Hamas as a terrorist organization. We've got this bizarre situation here in Britain where the Palestine Action, the non-violent group which has been trying to stop the genocide by closing down those who are supplying weapons to the Israelis, they have been proscribed, as Hamas, as a terrorist organization, supposedly. Whereas the British government are also trying to recognise the state of Palestine, and they've just done so. So what is going on here is Hamas are being singled out, even though they are, from 2006, the elected government, the majority of Palestinian people in Gaza. So there is a complete hypocrisy at the heart of, it seems to me, of much of what we're hearing. So the Palestinians are the ones who are the victims, and they're being painted as terrorists. Actually, the real terrorists in this conflict are, of course, the Israelis, who are using, abusing and misusing all the weapons of war against civilian populations.
Yes.
And they're trying to frame the Palestinian population as if they are Hamas.
Well, a group of UN experts has called on the International Federation of Association Football, FIFA, and Europe's Football Association, UEFA, to suspend Israel from football events over its crimes in Gaza. The UN experts said in a statement that national teams which represent entities that commit massive human rights violations should be suspended. They added that suspending Israel is a necessary response to address the ongoing genocide in Gaza. The experts also urged countries that host international organizations and sporting competitions not to remain neutral in the face of genocide. Their remarks came after comments by former Manchester United star Eric Cantona, who denounced what he called the double standards enjoyed by Israel. He said 4 days after Russia started the war in Ukraine, FIFA and UEFA suspended Russia, but after over 700 days of genocide, Israel continues to be allowed to participate. Author and journalist Sakina Datu joined us earlier. She explained how the international sports bodies and fans can take action to stop the Israeli genocide in Gaza.
I think it's a very powerful message. Not only is it coming from the UN experts, but you know, this group of a lot of people, including fans, activists, they're also supporting this initiative. You know, the No Game Over initiative is there to ensure that Israel is not allowed to play in any of the international sports, and particularly, I think, in football. I think what is important is to know that actually the heads of these football federations, they do have the authority. People are waiting for FIFA and UEFA to take action. But even, you know, before we go to FIFA and UEFA, these heads of football associations themselves have the authority. Now, I think this fact was not always known, because this is a bottom-up initiative to ensure that the fans can actually influence this. We have been seeing in the past few months that whenever there is a football match and Israel is playing, fans usually go there and they are against the Israeli teams. So I think by this initiative, by putting it together, it is giving voices to ordinary people who really feel frustrated by all this propaganda. And I think it is a very powerful way of tackling a nation like Israel. Of course, you mentioned, you know, this was the same case in apartheid South Africa. What it does, I think what sports does, is it brings ordinary people to take the action.
The global Samud flotilla, which is en route to Gaza to break the Israeli siege of the territory, reports that it has been once again attacked by drones. The flotilla said in a statement that more than 15 drones hovered above the Alma boat at low altitude, appearing roughly every 10 minutes. It said one of the drones dropped a substance with the smell of gunpowder on a ship, while another drone fired a projectile which fell into the sea. The flotilla also reported multiple explosions and communications jamming, noting that the incident was apparently aimed at intimidating the activists and gathering intelligence for Israel. The statement said the lengths to which Israel and its allies will go to prolong the genocide in Gaza are sickening, but their tactics will not deter the activists from delivering aid to Gaza and breaking its illegal siege. It stressed that every attempt to intimidate the activists only strengthens their commitment, as they will not remain silent and will continue to sail. And that brings us to an end here on this edition of World News. Do stay tuned, though. Bye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. English Radio.
We all know the Walt Disney trademark, a company that has been able to find its way into countries and cultures with its animations. A 100-year-old company whose animation production is only a small part of its activities. Now Walt Disney owns many theme parks, news networks, film companies, and small businesses. Famous businesses like Baby Einstein Company. Walt Disney produces toys and multimedia products through this company, products for children from 3 months to 3 years old. These productions are supposed to promote children's interactive activities, creating a sense of curiosity through art, classical music, and poetry is the output of this company. Products that are not going to turn children into Einsteins of the future, but are popular with parents. Parents who are customers of other products in addition to these ones. The early 20th century was an ambiguous time. On the one hand, there were talks about the World War I, and on the other hand, major transformation in science and technology. These changes could be kind of scary, like what happened in the same years for the film of the Lumiere brothers. These two brothers recorded a video of a few seconds of a train entering the station with their camera, a movie that scared the audience in its first screening. People at that time had no understanding of the concept of the cinema. Therefore, when they saw the train in the picture coming towards them, they all ran away from the hall. The story of this funny fear soon became a normal process. But the concept of fear was not something that would be resolved anytime soon.
When we raise kids this way, and I'll say we, because Lord knows in raising my two teenagers, I've had these tendencies myself, our kids end up leading a kind of checklisted childhood. And here's what the checklisted childhood looks like. We keep them safe and sound and fed and watered. And then we want to be sure they go to the right schools, but not just that, that they're in the right classes at the right schools, and that they get the right grades in the right classes in the right schools. But not just the grades, the scores. And not just the grades and scores, but the accolades and the awards and the sports and the activities and the leadership. And all of this is done to some hoped-for degree of perfection. We expect our kids to perform at a level of perfection we were never asked to perform at ourselves. And so because so much is required, we think.
The situation of boomerang children shows strange data. The parents of many of them supervise their children's upbringing all the time, but the situation of some others is different. Some studies report extreme parenting among working parents. Working parents feel weak with the idea that they're not with their children for many hours of the day, a feeling that leads to a strange reaction. Working parents decide to make up for the lack of parenting in some other way. Surveillance cameras, time management software, and hiring a nurse are only part of their response. These parents are looking for any means and excuse to have more control. One of the excuses is the old research called brain plasticity. This famous research claimed that the formation of a child's talent, especially in the first 3 years, is a function of the environment. A child can have a bright future if she or he is given the right motivation and careful upbringing. This research was important in that it justified extreme parenting. Based on the results of this research, parents expose their children to any product or situation to strengthen motivation. However, later research cast doubt on the results of brain plasticity. These studies said that motivation is useful for the purpose of developing talent, but not so much that everything is based on it. Of course, it was too late. The flow of extreme parenting became so wide that it seemed unstoppable. Parents were worried about their children and would do anything to solve this concern. Parents' concern about their child's future is perhaps the most important reason for choosing extreme parenting. Some researchers see the reason for this concern in successive economic recessions. The economic crisis of the 70s was perhaps the first warning to parents. Touching the economic insecurity of those years, parents decided to shape the future of their children themselves. The main goal of parenting was doing it in an effective way, a parenting that can guarantee the best life, the best job, and the best income for children. A deep concern that has created disastrous consequences. A consequence like boomerang children who are now unable to leave their homes due to the severity of their dependence.
A parent's job is never done. According to U.S. Census data, approximately 32% of people between the ages of 18 to 34 live in their parents' home. 1 in 9 parents said their adult children returned home within the past year. Experts are calling them boomerang children.
How come you still live with your parents?
Rent is expensive.
And why do you think more young people like yourselves are staying at home longer?
They need to be able to save money to afford their own homes.
My family members, a lot of them already went to college and they graduated, but they still live with their parents. And I think the reason why is, like, obviously it helps them save money.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely student loans. So, yeah, I think that's our main contributor to why we're staying home longer.
But I don't think it's just financial. I also think it's emotional. I think more young people, and that means young adults as well, up to 25, are feeling more emotionally fragile than ever before in history.
They're breathless. They're brittle. They're a little burned out.
They're a little old before their time, wishing the grown-ups in their lives had said, what you've done is enough. This effort you've put forth in childhood is enough. And they're withering now under high rates of anxiety and depression. And some of them are wondering, will this life ever turn out to have been worth it?
In recent years, the results of half a century of extreme parenting have become more apparent. If fear in childhood was considered a disease before, now childhood itself is a disease. Children are called depressed if they are quiet and calm. If they are noisy, they're called hyperactive. If they're afraid of the exam, they have exam disorder. If the exam is not important to them, they must have a problem with concentration. If they're sociable, they're anxious. And if they're shy, they're afraid of crowds. All hidden lines in their painting are interpreted as psychological damage. And all the words show hidden complexes. They are under the microscope, a microscope that connects childhood itself and every behavior to a disease. Of course, childhood disease has another side too. Many researchers emphasize that the psychological condition of children and adolescents in the world is not favorable. Children themselves use medical terms such as depression, stress or anxiety to describe their condition. Statistics also show that delinquency, abnormal behavior, and drug use are increasing among them. In universities, the situation is not better. Mental health tests say that yesterday's children and today's students are in different stages of mental breakdown, a situation that may be the main reason for extreme parenting.
Well, we parents are pretty sure it's all worth it. We seem to behave, it's like we literally think they will have no future if they don't get into one of these tiny set of colleges or careers we have in mind for them. Or maybe we're just afraid they won't have a future we can brag about to our friends and with stickers on the backs of our cars. What I'm saying is, when we treat grades and scores and accolades and awards as the purpose of childhood, all in furtherance of some hoped for admission to a tiny number of colleges or entrance to a small number of careers, that's too narrow a definition of success for our kids. And even though we might help them achieve some short-term wins by overhelping, like they get a better grade if we help with do their homework, they might end up with a longer childhood resume when we help.
Today's situation is the result of many decades of pressure on children. The pressure to learn skills, to memorize course content intensively, to get better results in exams, and to get into top universities. This pressure sometimes ends in mental collapse and sometimes in widespread cheating in exams. Sometimes it is reflected in the unwillingness to live, and sometimes it has caused the real expert force to no longer exist. Research says that extreme parenting has created a selfish and incapable generation. Those who are results-oriented in life as a whole. A generation without real and necessary experience for life. A generation with maximum dependence, which comes from the same parenting method. A result of test-oriented and result-oriented parenting. That is why critics consider this situation a crisis. a crisis that needs to be thought about.
Am I saying every kid is hardworking and motivated and doesn't need a parent's involvement or interest in their lives and we should just back off and let go? Hell no. That is not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that all of this comes at a long-term cost to their sense of self. What I'm saying is we should be less concerned with a specific set of colleges they might be able to apply to or might get into, and far more concerned that they have the habits, the mindset, the skill set, the wellness to be successful wherever they go. What I'm saying is our kids need us to be a little less obsessed with grades and scores and a whole lot more interested in childhood providing a foundation for their success.
Critics say there is no quick way to solve the crisis. That is why their movement is called slow movement. In slow movement, solving the parenting crisis requires time. To think more about now and stop worrying about the future. To care about the result, but we don't focus all our energy on the result. In order to further explain their idea, they go to two different categories in parenting. Two vital issues called encouragement and punishment.
When a child is learning to walk, that's the last time we allow ourselves to be overjoyed by the fact that they're trying and failing and trying again.
Of course, the process of encouragement and punishment starts from the first days of birth. The type of treatment is different at different ages, but all parents have to sometimes encourage and sometimes punish. Critics say that extreme parenting has gone too far, even in encouraging and punishing. Apart from the issue of physical punishment, which is extremely harmful, they talk about the emotional interactions of parents. That complimenting the child or sudden sharp reactions have become normal. What these people mean is to stay away from extreme and get closer to the natural reaction. If the child's behavior needs encouragement, encourage him as much as he does, and if he deserves punishment, reprimand him equally.
There's a four-step method for teaching kids skills. Step one, you do it for them. Step two, you do it with them. Step three, you watch them do it. Step four, they can do it independently. If we don't do this, we will have among us a young adult population that doesn't know how to hashtag adult. Kids have to be able to make their own mistakes growing up. Life is about having confidence that if you took the wrong path, you can get on the right path. That if you fall down, you can get back up. You know, the moment they learn to walk, they're walking away from us. And it feels terrifying. But as paradoxical as it may sound, our job as parents is, like it or not, to put ourselves out of a job.
The damages of exaggerated encouragement and punishment show themselves against their natural type. Some societies that are not yet involved in extreme urbanization have the same old parenting process. They don't get so angry about their children's work, nor are they so excited and happy. This logical behavior makes the child have a real encounter with his surroundings. To understand the main value of his decisions and do not build his mind structure based on encouragement or punishment of parents. Critics also criticize extreme parenting. They say that too much interference ends up in the child's anxiety. It limits his curiosity and creativity. it makes him not gain real experiences. It causes it to grow up in a greenhouse environment and face problems in adulthood. Instead, involving them in the daily affairs of the family can be of great help to them. Giving small responsibilities, taking them into account in family matters, and listening to their opinions and decisions. According to them, the solution to overcome the crisis is the revival of participatory methods in parenting. The presence of parents alone is not enough. Brothers, sisters, grandfathers, grandmothers, and other relatives should participate in raising children. The presence of children in a group and spending time with different people means opening new doors to the world. It means freeing from the shackles of a certain type of bringing up and means real exposure to the world. Children need liberation more than limitation, letting and more than interference. They need creating a platform for life, to enter social groups, to trust them so that they have a sense of relative independence and feel that they have a personality separate from their parents. They should not be watching the decisions of the parents. They should see, hear, and talk so that their true personality is formed. A character who can get out of the vortex of parenting with his own will and effort.
Don't be shy, just let your feelings roll on by. Don't wear fear, or nobody will know you're there. Just lift your head, and let your feelings out instead. Don't be shy, just let your feelings roll on.
thank you for joining us. The series of recognitions of the Palestinian state around the world, the continuation of the war of extermination, destruction, and displacement in Gaza City, the Israeli fear of the possibility that soldiers of the occupation might be killed or captured by the resistance, the escalation of attacks in the occupied West Bank, as well as the intensification of rocket and drone launches from Yemen against the Israeli entity, and the repercussions of the crossing incident between Jordan and the lands of the occupied West Bank. These are the topics that will be the focus of discussion in this episode with Dr. Ali Hamia, military and strategic researcher, joining us here in the studio. Hello and welcome, Doctor.
Thanks for having me with you today.
Actually, the recognition of the Palestinian state will not change anything on the ground. And a conference at the United Nations under Saudi French sponsorship is nothing but a theater. However, Israel is not happy about this, according to the expression of the Zionist ambassador to the United Nations. If the recognition of a Palestinian state will not change anything on the ground, as the Israeli ambassador to the UN highlighted, then what's behind this sweeping Israeli anger behind this recognition by Zionists, whether in Netanyahu's administration or even political opposition?
Well, let's see first. The main key word in this subject is, if it is a play, it's a theater, it's true. Before starting the recognition of the Palestinian state on the 4th of June,
yes,
1967, could this powers stop the killing and the genocides and the ethnic cleansing that been continued by the Israelis against the Palestinian? Well, first, we know if the Israelis entity did not listen to them to stop the killing machine against the Palestinian, how come they will stop being saying that there is no such Palestinian state? And that's the announcement. They said they want Gaza to be demolished and they want to annex West Bank in addition to Golan Heights and southern of Syria. So their plans are different from what MBS said with France, and I think it's only given more time to the Israelis to do their killings against the Palestinian. And I don't think, after all the glorious that Netanyahu is feeling now,
okay,
with his craziness.
But if this is a conspiracy, why this anger, Dr. Ali? A huge wave of anger.
They will not listen to what's going on, and they know it's a big plan, and they are a big player in it, the Israelis. They want to show that it is in the hand of the West to kill, it is in the hand of the West to stop killing, it is in the hand of the West, and especially United States, which is the main dominators of the area. It can stop it at any time. Now it's not the time. It's not the real time right now. It's not the appropriate time to stop what's going on after 2 years.
Yes, but that does not explain the huge anger that we have actually witnessed during reports, during our own observations, to the reports coming in from the Hebrew media, whether through the UN ambassador, whether through Netanyahu himself, where he said that when I return back, I will have the strongest response to this recognition of a Palestinian state.
Well, Netanyahu is a fugitive now. There is a big verdict against him in the International Criminal Court, and he should be jailed right now. And according to the international law, he has no right to declare any declaration worldwide, and he should not be listened to. But the main point here, as always, the Israeli entity play the role of the victim. And even though they are killing the Palestinian, and the international declaration is the recognition of the Palestinian state, the Israeli is still, He's killing the Palestinian, and he's trying to play the role of victim. And right now, he's saying that if the declaration will be implemented on the ground, mm-hmm. it means that Israel lost the war and Hamas is the victorious in this war.
Okay, so looking for empathy, as you highlighted, worldwide and using it for their own advantage. However, we remain with the war of extermination in Gaza, where doubts continue about the possibility of fully achieving its goals. A former Israeli military intelligence official pointed out that there are mistakes in the Gaza City operation and that the matter requires an administrative decision for a full resolution. Do you think that the Israeli military is pursuing a wrong strategy in Gaza, and how costly will this operation be on them?
Let me briefly say in what's going on. Israel is winning points, is winning tactical margin of what's going on in the area, especially in Gaza. But I think Israelis are like a cubic ice cube that is melting in the middle of the desert. They believe that they are big, but they are melting within the 2 years of fighting against the Palestinian, and still up to now, all their plans went into the drain. None of them could, let's say, gain what's their goal from it. We are talking about freedom of the captives or the POWs, or exchange of them by the Palestinian, or dominating.
But
or
haven't
Gaza.
They severely weakened Hamas, Dr. Ali?
They are both weakened. Not only Hamas. We are talking about after 2 years, strategic-wise, we are talking about freedom fighters. They are countable. Israeli soldiers and army, I think there are more than 650,000 soldiers. Up to now, they could not finish the war in 360 square kilometers in Gaza. So in
against
15,000 freedom fighters.
Okay.
And now we are talking about huge infantries, big, huge mechanized platoons and brigades. We are talking about huge firepower from sky fighter jets. And up to now, there is no achievement.
You're speaking about technological advancement yet.
Up to now, Hamas is still fighting. Yesterday, there were two missiles launched against Ashdod from Gaza.
Yes.
It means that Hamas is continuing until the end, and this war will not stop soldier of Israel or the last soldier of Hamas.
But do you see the same analysis? Would you share the same analysis when we speak about the strategy that's been used in the Gaza City specifically?
Exactly. Gaza City is the core of what's going on in Gaza. And I believe, we all heard Netanyahu saying that he wants to defeat Hamas. He wants to occupy Gaza City. So it means that up to now he did not defeat Hamas, and he did not occupy Gaza. It means that the incursion is different from domination. Israel is trying to do some incursions up and down, and they are trying to kill and destroy the civilians. They are trying to make the starvation for the whole population of Gaza, but up to now did not succeed.
Okay.
What we are talking about after 2 years and still the
yes.
Gazian fighting against the Israelis.
Okay, in Israeli security circles, however, of course, concern is mounting over the possibility of soldiers of the occupation being captured by the resistance during the ground assault on Gaza City. Security institutions in the entity also estimate that there is a possibility of Israelis being kidnapped abroad, specifically in Taba and Sinai, as one of the Hebrew media correspondents said. Why do you think that the threat level for Israelis abroad has been increasing? And also, do you foresee a potential kidnapping of Israelis, as the report highlighted, in Taba and Sinai?
Well, if they are talking about the kidnapping of the Zionist Jewish people abroad, they are kidnapping every day. The Israeli are kidnapping Palestinians, and they are kidnapping everywhere by Mossad or others, kidnapping people from everywhere around the world. But always trying to play the victim role is not working anymore, not in the United States. We can see like a generation fight now going on between the supporting of the Jewish state and the supporting of the patriotism inside the United States. I think now talking about the possibility of Israelis being, may be kidnapped around, I think the Israeli now, the Israeli entity, and I think the research institutes understand exactly by expanding the war by Israel with the surrounding countries, it means they are afraid of transfer the war between armies to be between directly between the people of the surrounding countries against the people of the Jewish state.
So the fears are justified, in your opinion?
I think they know because of their what they're doing, because of what they committing against the Palestinian and the others. I think maybe it will be normal for them to take it into consideration.
Okay. Israeli social media, however, witnessed a campaign by the mothers of Zionist soldiers in Gaza, both living and dead. They attacked Netanyahu for sending their sons into the Gaza war. Here are some of the comments.
Farid Anbar. Remember, mothers, Netanyahu said he was ready for 200 soldiers killed in Gaza. He does not care about their blood. Two more were killed at the Allenby crossing, and four soldiers in Rafah. More and more families are joining the bereaved families in Israel. Ma Oz. There is not much difference between a mother of a soldier fighting now in Gaza and a mother of a captive soldier. Both have a son in Gaza who may die as a result of the IDF operations. Why don't the soldiers' mothers go out to protest, as the four mothers did in the Lebanon War? Holy Smock. When four soldiers fall, six Israeli civilians are killed. Soldiers commit suicide, a policeman is killed, and 11 funerals are held in a single day in cemeteries across Israel. The scum of the administration rush to smile at political events. The mothers sit crying, the fathers weep, the children pray. Meanwhile, they laugh for the camera. Damn you, destroyers of Israel.
Moving to the occupied West Bank, which is witnessing escalation in both attacks and resistance operations, where the occupation army uncovered sites for manufacturing rockets in three areas of the West Bank. What does it mean now when the occupation army uncovered three sites for manufacturing rockets in the West Bank, and what it claimed were rockets in the occupied West Bank?
Yeah, I believe that the Israelis are now trying to prepare some excuses in advance in order to annex West Bank, and it's not secure anymore. So even though they didn't show the big area where they found such rackets, and as I see, it's very, very, weak rackets. I believe that Hamas is well advanced to do such rackets as they show.
So you're saying they're using this as a pretext for annexation in the West Bank?
Exactly. They are trying to say, they already declared in the Knesset that they want to annex West Bank to and the Jordanian Valley to the Israeli entity. Now they...
But isn't a rising threat to the Israelis, a resistance threat to rise
I think
against the Israelis in the West Bank.
I think that the threat is Israel against the Palestinians, who control the security, who controls the big armies, and I'm talking about armies because they are different brigades and divisions, who control the borders between West Bank and Jordan, who control Philadelphia path, who control all the borders around West Bank and around Gaza. The Israelis are controlling all the borders, The Israelis are killing the people. The Israelis are trying to invent and create new excuses to put the spotlight on.
But obviously, the resistance over there, Dr. Ali, will not stay silent.
I think it will.
Do you think there will be a rise in the resistance movement?
Of course, sooner or later. I think, as we remember, Jenin camp all the time. The freedom fighters there were fighting against the Israelis, and Israel destroyed the whole camp once, twice, three times, four times since the 1987. And up to now, we're still seeing freedom fighters coming to fight against the Israelis. I think just with little coordination with the freedom fighters from the Palestinian Authority, it will be better. But there is a big coordination between the Palestinian Authority and the Israelis against the freedom fighters. And this is the main weak points of the resistance in West Bank.
Okay, and to the Yemeni front supporting Gaza, which continues despite repeated Israeli attacks on Yemen, with vitality, where rockets and drones are launched almost daily. The Hebrew media indicated that one drone succeeded a few days ago in striking a hotel in Eilat. Obviously, the Yemeni front continues to cause pain to all the Israelis. What does this reflect in terms of repercussions on Netanyahu's administration and also on the occupation army, Dr. Ali?
As I said at the beginning, that all the parties are now weakened, including the Israeli entity. So nobody has to claim that Israel is still more powerful than the others. Mm. And we can see what's going on in Gaza and in Lebanon. And also the main front is Yemen. Yemen, they have the new technology of new rockets, new big missiles that can go inside, and new kind of drones. We are talking about some Mark 4. They open a new corridors to let the drones arrive quietly and smoothly inside the occupied territory. So it means now, as what's going on against Gaza, Yemen is trying to do against the Israelis.
Okay.
We can see economic-wise, military-wise, and strategic-wise,
okay,
Yemen is dominating the sea, dominating the tracks of the ships mm-hmm. going in and out.
As long as Gaza is under siege, and that's
siege,
a promise made by
exactly,
them. Dr.
Exactly.
Ali Hamia, military and strategic researcher, thank you very much for joining us in today's episode.
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
Some statements by Imam Khamenei about martyrdom March 16th, 2019 One's endeavors in the way of God cannot be rewarded and compensated with anything worldly. Allah the Exalted